Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's Brian Christopher. Ready to chill this summer? You're in luck. I'm hanging out at Chumba Casino, and you're in for a treat. Chillax with hundreds of games, daily bonuses, exciting spins, and epic prizes. It's all here, always free to play. Kick back, have fun, and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's make this summer legendary.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs 21 plus.
Do you like games?
I love games.
Real quick before we get started, we have something really cool we want to tell you about. A new game.
Bullets and Teeth and Aliens is a co-op all-in-a-box sci-fi card game for 2 to 5 players where your goal is to work together, blast space bugs, and get paid.
In the game, the Science Corporation has discovered aliens on Mars, so it's up to you and your friends to fight back against the alien space bugs, obtain powerful upgrades, and earn your paycheck.
There's also an Exterminator edition available that includes unique foil bait cards, premium metal coins, and an alternative art box, too.
Plus, the campaign has added new bundles that include new offerings, such as the original Bullets and Teeth game and playmats, too.
This campaign is coming to an end this week, so use our link in the affiliate down below to get your copy of Bullets and Teeth and Aliens.
Now let's get into the video.
A podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we are talking about the best planeswalkers in CEDH. We talked about the best creatures. We talked about the best lands. We haven't talked about instant sorceries, artifacts, or some other things. But this week, we're talking about the best planeswalkers in CEDH.
This is a really surprising one for me because there's a lot more cards on this list than I thought that we would have.
Yeah, there's a lot of almosts, I feel like, for planeswalkers in CEDH. I feel like at the top deck, there's not a ton that see a ton of play, but there are a few, and there's a ton that see play in that tier 2, tier 3 area of CDH, so they're still powerful enough to talk about. But yeah, we don't see them quite as much in the very, very top decks, right?
No, there's like maybe one or two that get seen play in the top decks of CEDH. There's some that see play in the 99 of decks, some that see play in the command zone of other decks.
Are we going by any pattern? But like, are we starting with the ones that go in the command zone, or are we just going by alphabetical?
We're going alphabetical.
Well, all the ones that we deem good enough for
CEDH. And we're going to rank them.
All right, I'm into it. What's the first one?
The first one is Amanatu, the Fate Shifter.
Okay.
This is a white, blue, and a black for a legendary planeswalker Amanatu. I'm not going to read that line for the rest of the day.
Yep.
She comes in with 3 loyalty. You can plus her up to draw a card and then put a card from your hand on top of your library. You can minus her for 1 to exile another target permanent you own, then return it to the battlefield under your control, and you can minus 6 her to choose left or right. Each player gains control of all non-land permanents other than Amanatu, the Fate Shifter, controlled by the next player in the chosen direction, and she can be your commander.
We don't care about the ultimate. We're really just after that minus 2, and there's really only one deck that can use Amanatu, and it's Sissei.
She's a minus 1, actually.
Minus 1, sorry. Yeah. That minus ability, and it's Sissei. And right now, I feel like we're not 100% positive if Sissei even still exists as a powerful CDH deck. If it does, it uses this one primarily to use Amanatu. Well, it used to be able to blink Docksides, but now it's part of the loop that will allow you to blink other Planeswalkers so you can use their ability again to hopefully untap or do something to make a new Hasty Bloom Tender or something.
Yeah, exactly. And this worked really well in conjunction with other Planeswalkers that could gain the ability of Planeswalkers you controlled so that way you had another permanent that could also blink Amanatu and let you go through those cool loops.
Yes. Nicol Bolas, Dragon God is probably on our list that we maybe will talk about today. That alongside with Amanatu and Oath of Teferi is an infinite combo that will allow you to have infinite planeswalker abilities and then use Nicol Bolas' ability to draw your whole deck and have your opponents exile all of their permanents and all of their cards in hand, because you'll be able to have Amanatu and Nicol Bolas blink each other back and forth, and since Oath of Teferi allows them to activate twice, they'll also be able to activate in between that.
And some kind of silly music plays in the background while you're doing all this.
This card is only good in that one line, in that one deck that is not so great anymore.
You don't think she's a deck anymore?
I mean, not to herself.
Yeah, because I've seen her in the command zone.
I guess that's fair. I have seen her herself in the command zone. We should mention that. There's a combo with Altar of the Brood and something else.
Yeah.
You get to, I don't remember exactly what it is. I'm sure if we looked on Commander Spellbook, a pretty decent resource to look for combos. There is a combo with Amonatu, the Altar of the Brood, and I think you got, I don't know exactly what else you have to do. Maybe Oath of the Fairy? No. What is it?
Let's see.
Hold, stand by.
The hardest part's going to be remembering how to spell Amonatu.
Is it Animatu or Amonatu? I always get the M and the N mixed up in that name.
Amonatu, but I always forget that the last part of her name is T-O-U. I just go
Amonatu, kind of.
Amonatu.
What's coming up? Any combos?
So with Felidar Guardian, you just get infinite LTBs and ETBs.
Okay, and then you need the Altar of the Brood to have a payoff for that infinite ETBs.
Oh, here
ETBs.
We go.
That's
yeah, with
thinking.
Like Spark Double.
Yep.
Like Spark Double allows you to copy Amonatu, and then with Altar of the Brood out, then you're able to mill out everyone because they just keep blinking each other.
There you go. I have considered playing Felidar in Sisse before because Saheeli Rai is another combo in that deck that also combos with Felidar Guardian.
That's
another piece of the combo.
Really cool.
So,
LOL. LMAO
overlapping
even.
There, but yeah. I never actually pull the trigger on it. What? How do you feel about Amonatu as a rating? As a CDH deck, I don't think it's particularly great. I think there's a lot of better Esper options. And then as a combo, it's very kind of specific and niche.
I think so too. I don't think what she really gives you in the command zone is card advantage, because the problem is that she was made for a Miracles precon deck that required you to want to play cards like Entreat the Angels and Terminus in your deck and other things that really aren't that good. I guess now we have a spell that's, if you miracle it, it's one in a black, and you get a 4/4 that also reanimates a creature from your graveyard, right?
Yes. So, what is the name of the card? I thought it was a 5/5 lifelink, but maybe it is a 4/4. Yeah, but if you miracle, yeah, it's basically just 2-mana reanimate a thing with the finality counter on it.
It's already on the screen, but I'm going to find out its name because I really want to know what it is. Do I not know how to spell miracle? No, I do. Okay. Oh, it's Metamorphosis Fanatic is the name of the card. It's a 4/4 with lifelink.
It has a lifelink.
When
okay.
it enters, return up to one target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield with a lifelink counter on it.
Yeah.
Not a finality counter on it, with a lifelink counter
on it.
That's
much better.
So it gives it an upgrade, too.
That's great. That's super fun. I don't know that's what I would want to be doing in CDH.
Me neither. Because not only do you have to put your Hoarding Broodlord in the graveyard, but you also have to put this on top of your library and then activate Amonatu.
Maybe too many steps for not the best payoff.
Way too many steps. So I think that Amonatu is probably going to get probably a 2.5 was going to be her maximum, because if she was going to be played in one deck, then for us, she would get a 3 out of 5. But that one deck, we're not quite sure of where its standing is, and I haven't lost to it since the banning.
No, yeah. The ones that I've played against Sisse, the deck seems a lot slower, a lot more telegraphed. I'm sure that Sisse can still exist. I've kind of said that before. It's just going to exist at a different level, and I think the Sisse pilots are still looking for the best way to do it, because it loses that explosiveness that Dockside offered it, and without that, it becomes harder for a CDH deck to compete at the top tables without a way to be explosive. You need that element to the deck, I think. I agree with you. 2.5 is good. It has potential, and I think even as a commander, it's like a fun Esper CDH commander for sure. I just think it's a little bit less powerful than some of the other options we have, something like Malcolm Timna or Xur or Tivit or something like that.
I would totally agree. Yeah, so we'll move on now. We'll talk about Duretti Scrap Savant.
We just saw this on our channel recently.
We did.
We just had this. Yeah,
Ryan aka Tron is Bad just played this deck. He is 3 and a red. Duretti is not Ryan.
Yeah.
For a 3 loyalty, you +2 him to discard up to 2 cards and then draw that many cards, and you can -2 to trash for treasures, which is sacrifice an artifact. If you do, return target artifact card from your graveyard to the battlefield. And if you -10, you get an emblem that says whenever an artifact's put into the graveyard from the battlefield, return that card at the beginning of the next end step. I'm reading these loyalty abilities real fast because they're not going to matter. It's these pluses and minuses we care about.
The ultimates rarely matter.
And he can be your commander too.
Right. And I think that's the important part, because if you want to play mono red artifacts, this one just gives you a lot of reach, not literal reach, but it gives you a little bit of card advantage, card selection, access to the graveyard, all things that Mono Red Artifacts really wants to do.
We're really making sure that no one gets confused.
Don't
in this
you
section
dare
of the
get
podcast.
Confused. Yeah. How do you feel about Duretti?
I kind of like it as a strategy because it's fun and I really like artifacts, but that's really it. He's one of these commanders that got a huge boost when the One Ring was printed, like Arkham Dagson, where it gave you another thing that you could get and like really help you win the game from there, alongside of cards like Portal to Phyrexia, like being able to have Trash for Treasure in your command zone and get back some of these really impactful cards is really strong. It allows you to play cards like Goblin Welder, Goblin Engineer, and not feel like a silly goose a lot of the time. So I really like Duretti. I think that being locked into mono red is really his biggest problem.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue. Mono red is this lack of tutors.
I think he's gonna get a two for that reason. Yeah, because like you get some tools and the deck is a lot of fun and it's really cool to go off, but it's not because of Duretti. It's because the One Ring is such a powerful card.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And the fact that Duretti gets to play a lot of the keys, the one mana untappers that just work well with a lot of other artifacts, work really well with the One Ring, getting to untap the One Ring and drawing four, then five cards all in the same turn is nuts. But there's a reason that the mono red decks that do see play in CDH are Godo and Magda, things that have tutors staple to them.
Yeah.
Because red only has, realistically, Gamble. Imperial Recruiter is fine. Besides that, I don't think there's any reasonable tutors in red, right?
No, and you know who else really benefited from losing Dockside and playing the keys is Urza, Lord High Artificer.
Sure.
So, like, this is, there's a way more powerful version of this deck, but, like, if you want to play red, if you like artifacts in red, Duretti's here and you can have fun with Duretti, at least.
Yeah, I agree. I think two sounds great. You can win games. We just saw it beat our ass this weekend. It absolutely can win games with CDH. Not my play style. Two.
Exactly, yeah. All right, so we are going to move on. What's
moving
the next
on.
Card? Oh, I missed the next card. Oh, here she is. Dayada, Binder of Wills. She is one, a red, a black, and a white for a 5 loyalty planeswalker. You can plus 2 her to have up to 1 target legendary creature gain vigilance, indestructible, and lifelink until end of turn. You can minus 3 her to reveal the top 4 cards of your library, put any number of legendary cards from among them into your hand, and the rest into the graveyard. Then you create a number of treasure tokens for each card put into your graveyard this way.
That's the one we like.
Exactly. And then for minus 11, gain control of all non-land permanents until end of turn on top, then they gain haste until end of turn, and she can be your commander.
Yes, yeah, her being the commander. And also, this is a valuable piece of the Sisse combo line, I think.
Oh, that's interesting, too. I always forget about that.
Yeah, as long as you have 3 mana, like, available of, like, any color and 5 mana for a Sisse activation, and Sisse is big enough to go find Dayada, you can spend 5 mana to go get Dayada, minus her right away. She makes 4 treasures. Use one of your others to activate Sisse again, and then you can find things like Aminatus and things like that to activate Dayada again, basically, until you can get to the Aminatu Nicol Bolas Oath of Teferi line. I love her for that reason. That makes Sisse really great. The fact that you have a basically 8 mana win the game when Sisse's out, and Sisse's already big enough because you have another legendary permanent in play that you can go get Dayada. So a lot of boxes you have to check.
So many CEDH combos require a ton of setup. It's so funny.
Yeah. As a commander, how do you feel about her now since Mana Crypt and Julos are gone? Because I feel like she lost a bit.
I think she did. It just means that it's harder to get her out and to get yourself going, which I think if you're going to be in Mardu is like really where you want to be.
Yeah,
you want
to be able to. Dockside helps with that because of the pips.
Yeah, exactly. And like I think she goes, so what about Dockside? I'm going to make you all the treasures that you need. You just run Flicker, you just run Underworld Breach, and we're going to be good to go. I don't think she cares about Dockside, but I do think that she cares about Jeweled Lotus. I do think that she kind of cares about Mana Crypt. Maybe Dockside to like help get her out faster.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah, just like needing the pips for like red, black, white, and anything. Like, you need 3
true.
Different colors.
Yeah.
So a lot of your fast mana, like your Mana Crypt, it's not as helpful.
I think the goal of the deck, though, was to also get her out before Dockside's even good. Like, before Dockside's going to
be fast.
Yeah, right. So, like, you wanted to rely on Jeweled Lotus instead to be able to just go, oh, I just need like land and 2 petals, and then that way I'm good to go. So I do think that it slows her down quite a bit, which I think does hinder one of her greatest strengths.
Yes, yeah, that's true. Dayada's ability was that she could go super fast. She still can win the game pretty easily with Flicker and Underworld Breach, and there's a lot of cool things that Dayada can do. I don't think she's out of the count.
No, she works with cards that are already really good in the format, which I think is really strong.
That's important. That's what we're looking for. Whereas Aminatu works really well with cards that are not already in the format. I guess Flicker's not in the format for Dayada, but Underworld Breaches and that kind of work, the milling thing is particularly good with Breach.
And you know what? In her prime, you could Flicker Dockside Extortionist too and just have that be really good as
well. That becomes a little less. I think I rate this one, we gave Aminatu 2.5. I think Dayada's like a 2.7.
I was going to say a 3, actually.
Okay. Full 3, you know what? You've convinced me. Full 3.
Great. All right, yeah, let's do a full 3. All right, even though I do really like the rating 2.7, I think we're going to go We're going to go with a three. Yeah, okay. So Garrick Primal Hunter's next.
Oh, I like this one.
Me too. I
just
love
this one. Just for nostalgic
reasons. Exactly, yeah. So for 2 and 3 green, he's 3 loyalty. You can plus him up for 1 to get a 3/3 beast. You can minus him for 3 to draw cards equal to the greatest power among creatures you control. And you can minus 6 him to create a 6/6 green worm for each land you control.
This is one that I loved in Standard when it was in Standard
a thousand years ago.
That was great. Right now, it's mainly used in mono-green-ish strategies or Silvala-type things where power matters and you're just minusing it right away as a 5-mana way to draw 12 cards or something like that. I was playing it in Kona when I had Kona together. I took Kona apart since then. But being able put it into play off of a Kona when there's already something like, what's the 12-12 that puts as many creatures as you want from hand into
Galta?
Play? Galta, yeah, when there's a Galta in play and you just draw 12 right away.
Like, love that.
It was pretty good in that deck. This is another one that's only good in that specific deck, but it was one of the better cards in Kona, I think. It was like the reason that allowed me to like stay in the game when I can draw big bursts, even if it was like draw 8 cards or draw 5 cards, it was still really good.
I feel like, yeah, same thing in Silvala, where like at least Silvala can draw you a couple cards in the command zone, but you can still run out of gas. You're in mono green, right? Yeah. Stuff can go wrong. And just having this to go, oh, I'm even just going to draw 5 or just put them into play, draw just like 3 cards a lot of the time too, it's still pretty good.
There were situations where you can get this into play on turn 1, you plus and make a beast. Next turn when you minus to draw some cards, your Garruk stays around. People have to deal with it, sort of. In the right pod, in the right situation, in the right deck, I think Garruk is very powerful.
That's true.
Only in that very niche mono green home. Or maybe if you're in like a Dargo deck, if you want to play Gruul Dargo or something.
Gruul Dargo?
Another one that's hard without Dockside. But
yeah, and then you want to put a 5-mana Planeswalker in there that's triple green.
Yeah. Let's give it a two.
Do you think it's better than Duretti Scrap Savant or worse than Duretti Scrap Savant?
I like it more, but I think it's worse.
You think it's worse? Okay. Do you want to give it a 1.9 or is it still just a 2?
That's hard because Duretti you never really see in the 99.
You'll never see. Well, you'll never see Garrick in the command zone.
But only because it's not allowed to be. So like think for a second, if Garrick was allowed in the command zone.
Garrick would be pretty good. Yeah.
Because like Garrick really good.
You would just get your Stifle Knot situation going on.
Sure.
Or however you want to.
Just play a 5/5 and then cast it and just like your 5-mana commander draws you 5 cards. And then when your mono green decks, you make a whole bunch of mana, you cast it for 7 next turn and draw 12 or whatever.
Yeah,
would actually be incredible, I think, as a commander.
Yeah, in mono green, like I was thinking because, it's Silvala can use the Knot really good, Phyrexian Dreadnought really good because you can do it in response, you can activate it in response, but you can't really cast Garrick in response.
Garrick can't use the Knot in response, no.
But there's still a lot of other, like a Sheltering Agent. You just put Sheltering Agent into play. Yeah, big fucking shit, and then you play Garrick and then you just draw.
So because of that, only because I think Duretti only wins out because it's allowed to be in the command zone, it really doesn't see a play in the 99. So it's to me, and since Garrick would be really good in the command zone, I think Garrick is better. I'm going to give Garrick a 2.1.
Oh, shit. Well, I can't argue with that because you let me give Dayada a 3. So
it's only fair.
So it's only fair that Garrick Primal Hunter goes above Duretti Scrap Savant. And you know what? That's probably true because this gives Garrick a lot more decks that he can be played in.
And
so.
Then that's what's next? Aminatu and then...
And then Dayada. The best Planeswalker we've talked about so far.
Sounds good. What's next?
Grist the Hunger Tide.
Oh, yeah.
This is one, a black and a green for a 3 loyalty creature that's an 1/1 insect creature in addition to its other types as long as it's not on the battlefield. You can plus 1 him to create a 1/1 black and green insect creature token and then mill a card. And if you mill an insect, you put another loyalty counter on Grist and repeat the process, but you won't. If you minus 2 him, you may sacrifice a creature. And when you do, you can destroy a creature or a planeswalker. And for minus 5, each opponent loses life equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard.
This one is a destroy target creature in the command zone. It's a destroy target creature that you can tutor up with creature tutors, like Court of Calling, if it's in your 99.
That's what's really cool about it, I think. Yeah, you can just Court of Calling it right into play.
If it's in your command zone, you can sacrifice Protean Hulk, although it's kind of interesting because Varal's kind of does that a lot better, I think. You can cast the Varal's ahead of time, whereas casting this ahead of time is a little risky. People can attack it.
Yeah.
You get a blocker if you just make the 1-1 and you get one blocker, but if there's multiple attackers or a Crom out or something like that,
someone
it's going to be hard
Swan Song Deven, it's still going
to
mess you up. No, because that will put you...
They can Swan Song. Swansonging on the stack. It's a creature on the stack.
I was saying, like, if someone got Swansonged earlier, like, the 2-2 would still attack it.
I understand.
But that would still put Grist at 2 loyalty and still give Grist the ability to minus.
Technically. But the bird could, help attack the Planeswalker down easier.
This is one I've seen in the 99 of decks as well.
Yeah, I've thought about it in Tim Natana, Blood Pod, as just, like, I have so many creature tutors in that deck, like, a way that I can just tutor up a destroy target creature effect right away. Ravenous Chupacabra would be, like, the other creature that you could search up to do that, but that's 4 mana versus 3, and then it kind of doesn't do anything else, and I don't know how good Chupacabra is, whereas this is very versatile. This can do a lot of stuff if they can't get rid of it.
As long as you're, like, playing Mana Dorks, though, too, because I feel like if you're trying to do that, you need to be in, like, a Mana Dork deck, which a lot of green-black decks are, but, like,
you gotta be able to sacrifice something to do the thing.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of decks that, like, cut Llanowar Elves and stuff like that. Maybe these decks just put your Llanowar Elves back in.
Yeah, another cool thing that I forgot to mention, you can reanimate this with Reanimate Dead.
That's so... I always forget about that.
What happens if you Animate Dead this? Can Animate Dead be attached to a Planeswalker when it's in play? It can target it as a creature in the graveyard. I don't know. That's an interesting one that I hadn't thought about.
When Animate Dead enters the battlefield, it loses Enchant Creature card in graveyard and gains Enchant Creature put onto the battlefield with Animate Dead. If a creature put onto the battlefield has protection from black, or if the creature can't legally be enchanted by Animate Dead for another reason, Animate Dead won't be able to attach to it. It will be put into the graveyard as a state-based action, causing its delayed trigger ability to trigger.
So that means that Animate Dead cannot reanimate Grist, but Reanimate can, just like return a creature from the graveyard to the battlefield. That would work.
Say that last thing you said again.
Reanimate could reanimate Grist from the graveyard.
Yeah, because it targets it, and then you just lose 3 life.
And that's it, yeah. Whereas Animate Dead or Dance of the Dead or Necromancy could not reanimate Grist.
Yeah, and there's a second where it will check to make sure that it can still reanimate that thing.
And then, Grist is still good. I like Grist. I think it's a fine... If I saw it at a CDH pod, as a CDH table, I would say, oh, yes, this is okay. This is a CDH deck. I'm ready. I believe it. So I think it's a little bit better than Aminatu.
I think so, too. I was prepared to give Grist to 3.
Yeah, is it better? Is it? I feel like Diad is better than Grist, though. Is
I
that
feel
true?
Like, oh, that's true. Yeah, Diad is better than Grist. So Grist has to get like a 2.9.
2.9 for me. That sounds great. But just barely. And mainly because Diad has access to more colors. And Underworld Breach is just really good.
And their standalone deck, Diad is a lot better. Even though Grist sees play in more 99s.
That's true. Diad only sees play in Sisay. Grist, does Grist see play in a ton of other 99s?
Not a lot of them.
Not a ton of them.
One or two.
They're pretty equivalent, but I think Diad is better.
I think this is still fine.
I think
this is still fine.
What's next?
One that has fallen from favor. This is Jace, Wielder of Mysteries. 1/4 blue for 4 loyalty, and it has a static ability that says if you draw a card while you have no cards in your library, you win the game instead. You can +1 to have target player mill 2, and then you draw a card. And then you can -8 to draw 7, and if your library has no cards in it, you win the game.
Isn't this interesting that, like, there was a moment before Thassa's Oracle was printed where this was, in my opinion, one of, if not the best win conditions in CDH. There was a time where a Flash Hulk was still very prevalent, and I remember this with Tainted Pact and Demonic Consultation, and you would still play Laboratory Maniac. That was your deck. Like, this was, like, the way that you would win the game in, like, Dimir-based decks. I remember that pretty vividly. If you weren't playing Flash Hulk, this was the thing to do.
Yeah, blue, colorless, and black. So it's still only just, like, 5 mana, which is a lot cheaper than a lot of other combos.
Right. Yeah, the issue was the triple blue, which is why Thassa's Oracle, it's only double blue. That's so much better. So it's kind of interesting that, like, if Thassa's Oracle got banned, this would, I probably just take its place in almost every single deck, and I don't think anything would change realistically.
Yeah, I think it is still better than Lab Man, because Laboratory Maniac just requires you to have a third piece of your combo.
Yeah, this doesn't. This draws the card for you.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, at least, like, before Timna, you could at least, like, do stuff that didn't cost you other mana or, like, cast a spell, but that's still additional setup that you have to do. Like, it's all here on Jace.
Yeah, the only issue with Jace is that it's a little bit trickier to tutor for. Thassa's Oracle you can find with green creature tutors, whereas this you can't. And it's, you know, twice as expensive as Thassa's Oracle. It's a non-creature spell that's more easily counterable, like, by things like Fierce Guardianship and stuff like that. I still think this card is good. It's just, it's so strange that it's just, like, it's something that's strictly better than it is here. Strictly better, but...
Just strictly better for our format, right? Like, in Standard, this thing was able to, like, come into play and, like, mill, like, someone else, and then, like, draw you cards consistently over the course of the long game.
Yeah.
But that wasn't what this card does in CEDH at all.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like, this thing does have some positive effects. Thassa's Oracle is goose egg on its own. It's nothing. It's not helpful at all. That's, I mean, like that like weird scry thing is, I guess that's something. But
no one's ever done that ever. After the Thoracle consult win gets stopped and go, oh, I still did something helpful with this trigger.
Whereas like with the Jace, you at least like you literally draw a card. You mill someone else, which might not be good. Maybe they have a top tech tutor that you were able to get. That would be incredible. And then everyone has to do something about it. They have to focus on your Planeswalker. They'll probably kill it, but they kind of like must change their plan a little bit.
Well, you can target yourself with the mill. So
that's
like
true.
As the Kess Underworld Breach player, you would be able to still target yourself, fuel your graveyard and your Underworld Breach, and then like also try to protect it then and like go through the whole turn cycle and maybe try to target yourself again and draw some more.
Yeah, that's true. I think if you're in the dark and you don't know what's on the top of your opponent's decks, milling yourself is just better. As far as what to rate this one, it's tough because it doesn't see any play right now. I don't know.
It got so outclassed by something else.
Yeah, I don't know a single CDH deck that realistically would play this. I think maybe some should, but that's not the reality that we live in. I think, what's our lowest right now?
Right now, Duretti is at 2.
Yeah, this is worse than Duretti, right?
Because it sees like no play.
Yeah, 1.5.
Some play.
I'm going to give it a 1.5 due to potential.
Because it does have a lot of potential.
Yeah.
For other stuff in the format to happen, and then it will see play all again.
Yep.
Shall we talk about our next Planeswalker?
Yes, please.
So we got Jessica Thrice Reborn next.
Okay.
She's 2 and a red for a 0 loyalty Planeswalker. Well, I guess she enters with loyalty counters for each time you've cast a commander from the command zone this game. And for 0, you can choose target creature, and until your next turn, if that creature would deal combat damage to one of your opponents, it deals triple that damage to that player instead. And for minus X, Jessica Thrice Reborn deals X damage to each of up to 3 targets.
Yeah, so this is kind of like a Pyroclasm in the command zone, kind of like a pump spell in the command zone, right? That's the main thing that Jessica has done historically for us.
Well, really, she's an infinite mana outlet in
the command
zone. I guess
that's true. That's the most important to think about. Yeah, if you cast her over and over again, you can deal 3 damage to your opponents, and then 4 damage, and then 5 damage over and over and over again.
Exactly, yeah. So she grows exponentially, and she's great at removing pesky creatures in play, too. She starts off pinging down maybe small stuff, so a lot of times she comes in as the second commander that you play, so she can hit like a Timna, a Collector Oof, and maybe like Orcish Bowmaster still or something. And then the next time you cast her and she's taking out like your opponent's Ranger Captain of Eoses, like it really feels strong there.
Yeah, definitely. On paper, she seems so strong. She does so many good things. Being able to be removal, being able to be extra damage, being able to be a win condition. It's all so good on paper. In practice, I have found those things are not as good as they seem, and for a couple reasons. The first one, interacting with your opponents in CDH, I don't think it's good.
You should only be doing that on the stack when you're protecting your win condition.
That sounds weird, but like I just don't think it's good to interact with your opponents most of the time.
No.
Like, when you're getting the infinite mana part, you want to stop the infinite mana part. You don't want to counter her as much, right? Well, so that's the first thing, is that like I just don't think that the damage to your opponent's little stuff is really ever that good. You only want to kill it when you're ready to win the game. 3 mana as an effect to be ready to win the game, that's a little bit much. The pumping thing, the making triple damage for Ishai, you kill one player, it mat best. Your best case scenario is you use her to kill one player. That's not good, because then that's one less player that is going to interact with the other two players. Because remember, we've decided interacting with our players is bad.
Is bad, yeah, exactly.
Our opponents maybe don't know that. So we want them alive to interact with each other. That's the main thing. The infinite mana part is the best thing about her. If you're doing infinite mana with her and she's just that final spot, she's just your Thrasios, your win the game, and then your other commander is like pulling the deck, I like that a little bit more, I think. I don't know of a deck that really uses her just like that, just for the infinite.
Yeah, Jessica Timna, I would say.
Jessica Timna,
that's
true.
That's a great example, I think, of a deck that uses its first commander as Timna, as the one that it mainly wants to get out first.
Yeah.
And then use it to draw cards and get you into like your Ad Nauseam and your Underworld Breach, so that way you can find your infinite mana combo.
I have a question.
To use Jessica to win.
How do you make infinite mana in Mardu?
Oh, Bomberman. That's Bomberman. My favorite way to
okay.
do it. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, we're back
yeah.
to Bomberman.
You do
okay.
Bomberman. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, the combo you have to discard your whole hand for.
Yeah, well, you're already discarding your whole hand for Underworld Breach combo with LED anyway.
That is true. So by the time you're there, though, you have Underworld Breach with like counterspells in your graveyard that you can use normally.
Except we're in Mardu, so instead we silence.
We just have silence and
now
stuff.
Everything's okay.
Yeah. So I think my official opinion would be that Mardu, Jeska with Timna, and Timna being the focus, and Jeska just being a infinite mana outlet, I think that's the best case use for this card.
Yeah, I think so too, yeah. There's other, like, I've seen her paired with Thrasios, and I think that is fine too, but I don't think she's the best rug color pairing partner for Thrasios.
You already have the outlet.
Exactly, and that's the most important thing, yeah. And you already have a ton of interaction in your Thrasios deck, so you're not really concerned about using her for creature removal. If you're doing that, I always assume you have nothing going on.
It's like when Timna Tana casts Tana. It's very equivalent. Like, it is a 3-for-1, like that, a 3-for-0 technically, because it's not a card that you start with in your hand. Like, the rate is good. That effect is just, often I don't know that it directly leads to you winning the game. That's
no,
that's
reality for 3 mana to deal 2 damage to 3 things, that is really good.
Yeah.
5 mana to do 3 damage to 3 things, that rate is much worse. So like, she gets diminishing returns significantly as the game progresses.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that she can't be good. She can do really incredible, fun, super good things late in the game when she can just get rid of the exact sax pieces that you need so you can win the game on the spot. That's really great. She can do really great things. I like other stuff. I don't know. Is she better than Diada? Is this combo better than Diada? It's kind of interesting now that with Dockside gone, I'm not really sure anymore.
So I think that she's better than Diada because she can see play in more decks and can do more for you than Diada. Like, Diada requires a bunch of other cards that like kind of work together, and then Diada can be good. Jessica's cheaper, she's a lot easier to cast, and I think she's got a little bit more things that she can do and pull you in a little bit more directions. Like, Diada, I guess, is a combo piece and mana, whereas Jessica is a combo piece and removal
and haymaker.
And I guess
and like haymaker enabler.
Yeah, so I guess that's 3 things, whereas Diada is only 2. But I wouldn't put Jeska much higher than Diada. Like, I would say 3.1 for
yeah.
Jeska is
I mean,
where
like,
I'm looking at.
Yeah, some of the little things that Diada does, like giving lifelink to your creature, is also like a little haymaker thing that Diada does that I think it's more comparable to Jeska. Because like dealing extra damage to your opponents doesn't really do anything, but having your creature have lifelink and gain you life in your ad nauseum deck, that actually can be pretty relevant.
That's true. That can actually turn some stuff around.
I think you're right. Only in the fact that partner's broken, I give Jeska a higher rating because there's more shit that you can do. Diada is locked in. Jeska can be paired with a variety of different things.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, 3.1.
I guess we could also think about it like this. Like, is Jeska Timna a better Mardu deck than
That's the main Diada. Way that I'm considering it. Probably.
But then you can also use Jeska in other color combinations.
Not only is Jeska Timna probably better than Diada, my gut tells me that because I think Timna is really good, but Jeska can be paired with other stuff. So yeah, Jeska's got the higher rating, but not by much.
Not by much.
3.1?
I'm fine with 3.1, but you probably could sway me to go higher than that by a little bit if you wanted to.
I don't.
Okay. Kaito Bane of Nightmares is a new card that we didn't talk about in the Duskmourn set review, yeah. But I've seen a little bit of chatter about, and I don't know, I reread it, and I'm like, I don't know. So for 2, a black and a blue, we can ignore that because you can also ninjutsu him into play for 1, a blue, and a black. What
so
the fuck?
3 mana versus 4.
3 mana versus 4, yeah, and he comes in with 4 loyalty, but also during your turn, as long as Kaito has 1 or more loyalty counters on him, he's a 3-4 ninja and has hexproof. Kind of interesting. Not indestructible, though.
No evasiveness.
No.
But I'm assuming you ninjutsu'd him in already, so he doesn't need evasiveness.
Well, he's okay. A 3-4, but then you can also plus him for 1 so that you get an emblem. Whoa. With ninjas you control, get +1/+1. For 0, you surveil 2, then draw a card for each opponent who's lost life this turn. And for -2, you tap a creature and put 2 stun counters on it.
Huh. Can you plus him the turn that you ninjutsu him in when he's a 3-4? Is he still a planeswalker then?
He is
stumped immediately. What does it say?
During your turn, as long as Kaito has 1 or more loyalty counters on him, he's a 3-4 ninja creature and has hexproof. To me, that and doesn't this normally also say, and he's still a planeswalker on them?
Or it would say in addition to.
It's other types, right?
Yeah, it becomes
but
a 3-4 ninja in addition to its other types. But that would mean that if as long as it has... Wait, when is it a 3-4? When it has more than one loyalty?
As long as it has more than one loyalty.
So as long as it's around, you can't use it? That can't be right. That would mean you could never use it. So it must mean...
That would mean you could never use
right?
it.
I thought that said that it was a 3-4 as long as it entered the battlefield this turn. But that's not true, I guess.
No, as long as there's one or more loyalty counters on him. So if he dies on your turn...
But he's indestructible.
No, there's no indestructible.
Oh, I thought you said there was. Okay.
No, I specifically...
You said there wasn't.
No, because like Gideon gets indestructible when he becomes a creature, but they didn't do this with Kaito.
How is Gideon worded? Gideon's such a cool card, too.
All right, so here's Gideon Blackblade. As long as it's your turn, Gideon Blackblade is a 4-4 human soldier creature with indestructible. That's still a planeswalker.
Yeah, Kaito doesn't say that's still a planeswalker. Do they update the ruling? Because that feels important, like an important distinction.
And then what happens? So let's say you -2 Kaito, right?
How would you turn? It's a creature. How would you do that? I guess creatures can still activate their loyalty abilities. Maybe that's the rules difference, that if a creature has loyalty counters and loyalty abilities, maybe there's nothing stopping it from activating those abilities. Is that how magic works?
Can creatures activate loyalty abilities? A loyalty ability of a permanent can still be activated even if that permanent isn't a planeswalker.
Okay, so that's how it works.
So
when it's on the battlefield, it doesn't have the planeswalker type? Is that what it is? It's just a creature?
It might not be a planeswalker anymore. I mean, yeah, it's hexproof, so it's not like there's like removal stuff that you could target it with anyway.
Yeah, but it's just strange that it's not a planeswalker while it's in play, I think.
I guess like edicts would still affect it.
Yeah,
like you could,
I think it's only a bad thing.
So I guess every time that we said that on a Gideon, it was just superfluous.
No, because they can't attack this. They could still attack Gideon, although Gideon's was on your turn.
Yeah, and this is also during your turn.
Oh, it says during your turn, so they can attack it. Okay,
yeah,
okay,
so
okay.
Still
I'm learning so much
like
about this card. Why is this card so strange?
This is wild,
The
yeah.
+1 for an emblem on +1/+1 to ninjas means that there's a reasonable shot that you could, like... get +2/+2 permanently on all of your ninjas.
And that's pretty fucked up for a
and
3 mana card.
Fucked up.
Yeah, like so like your Yuriko deck is just like all of your creatures are just beating house, getting around all of the things that were like, "Oh, I got a Yuriko blocker."
I mean,
not anymore, bitch.
Yeah, +2 is basically evasion, not really, but like no one's going to block your 3/4 with their 2/2 Timna.
And if they do, they're going to start double blocking and then you're like 2-for-1 city.
Right, yeah, then I think you're okay with that. Interesting. Okay, so you get the +1/+1 as an emblem.
But also the surveil 2 and then draw a card for each opponent who has lost life this turn turns like Kaito into like a Timna then.
Is that effectively a surveil 2 draw 3 if you hit correctly?
If 3 opponents lost life this turn.
That's really good.
Not
dude,
even if you hit them.
Back together.
Not
oh my
even
God.
If you hit them. It's just if they lost life this turn.
If they lost life this
so
turn.
So you can, dude, you can even play
with
him
Yuriko.
After Yuriko. Yeah,
yeah,
so you can attack one player,
yeah.
Yuriko trigger, hit something.
Everyone takes one damage, whatever.
And then on your second main,
surveil
you draw 3.
But you have to cast it for 4 mana if you do it on your second main.
No, you just ninjutsu'd him in somewhere,
okay,
too.
Yeah, okay, I thought you were saying you don't even have to ninjutsu him.
Well,
I guess
you don't have to either. But still, that's draw 3, and then on your next turn, you just... do it all again.
But you can either draw or give the lordship thing. What's the third ability again?
-2 to tap a creature, put 2 stun counters on it.
That seems less good.
That's like a removal spell for something that doesn't have a static ability.
That seems like the less good ability. Yeah, this is interesting. I feel like this is another one that's only good in Yuriko.
Oh, I wouldn't play this anywhere else.
I
so that is going to affect its rating,
there
though.
Are some of the blue-black, like Satoru, that can give everything in your hand ninjutsu or whatever. I think there are some decks, would they want something like this?
No, because the Satoru decks are trying to, like, put in a Void Winnerer and stuff like
yeah,
that.
This
like,
is too small ball.
I think it's a little bit too small ball. Yeah, they do still want to play, like, the Ornithopters and stuff like that, but I don't think you care about giving them +1/+1. I think you just, like, want to put a humongous impactful creature into play with Satoru.
Yeah, I guess the big appeal to this one is that it can draw you cards if you need cards, but if you don't need cards and you just need your opponents to start getting dead quickly, it can also help you make your opponents
it
dead quickly.
It does both things, which I think are both things that Yuriko really wants
really
to
wants
do.
To
see more cards and kill their opponents
and
more quickly.
Finish the game quicklier, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Quicklier,
yeah.
Quicklier is how I said quicklier. It, and I'm sticking to it.
What do we rate Kaito?
Probably pretty high, right? What's their highest right now?
Right now, it's Jessica Thrice Reborn. It's going to be hard for me to say that it's going to be better than a proven CEDH
yes.
deck,
because
yeah. it's only seen play in one CEDH deck right now.
Although we should compare it to Diada in the 99, not Diada as a commander, because that kind of changes, you know, of course, as a commander,
maybe
we're going
to
see it more.
Maybe then we should be equating this more to like a Grist, the Hunger Tide, or an Amanatu then.
And I think, weirdly, if you compare it to Diada in the 99 and this in the 99, they're probably pretty similar because they go in exactly one deck. Although Diada is a win condition in Sisse, whereas this is just advantage in Yuriko. It's not necessarily a win condition. It's a powerful card. It's a good piece of the puzzle. But this is, Diada is a straight up win the game button in Sisse.
So is Amanatu then too. So like I feel like that.
No, because Amanatu needs other shit. Amanatu is part of the fet. You still need a mana maker with Amanatu. You still need a Bloom Tender. Diada is just by itself and.
And Sisse and the other stuff that
and
you need
stuff.
To help set
but
it up
Adam,
too.
But it's different.
I see what you mean. It's a slight difference, but it is different.
You need more specificity. Yeah. So I think Diada is better than this card. What is it called?
Kaito.
Bane of Nightmares.
Do you think that Kaito's better than Grist?
I think Dimir Yuriko is better than Golgari anything.
Okay. Or do we still want to consider that Grist is both a commander and a card in the 99 too?
I mean, I guess that does make it a more powerful card. If the card has the ability to be played as a commander, that is an aspect of the card that makes it more powerful. So that is a fair rating, I think.
Grist is looked at as a creature in other zones, yeah. Which I think also gives him a little bit more flexibility.
So maybe this is one lower than Grist, only because Grist has proven itself a little bit more, 2.8.
But this is better than Amanatu though, right? Because Amanatu is just like a combo piece, basically.
Yeah, at this point, Amanatu is just a combo piece.
All right, so we'll give Kaito a 2.8. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Karn the Great Creator.
Okay.
This is a 4-mana, 5 loyalty planeswalker that you can +1 to have up until your next turn, up to 1 target non-creature artifact become an artifact with power and toughness equal to its mana cost. And its -2 says that you can reveal an artifact you own from outside the game, and that doesn't matter because that's...
It does matter.
Oh, I guess, yeah, in case something
it
is
exiled. It just came up in our most recent game.
It actually did, yeah. Okay, so you can reveal an artifact card you own from outside the game or choose a face-up artifact card you own in exile and put that card into your hand.
Ryan just recently got his Aetherflux Reservoir Force of Negationed, which means it gets exiled, and he later used Karn to get it back from exile.
That's really good. The real reason why I think people put Karn in their decks, though, is because it has a static ability that says activated abilities of artifacts your opponents control can't be activated.
Yep. Yeah, that's the best reason. It's a one-sided collector oof that is the best thing about this card. It used to be able to kill mana crypts that weren't able to be used anyway. I can't really do that anymore. It can still kill Chromox and Mox Diamonds by turning them into a zero power creature that would just die right away.
So I guess that's still a thing, yeah. But it really is like just there for monocolor decks that aren't green to have a collector oof if they want that.
If Commander ever got a sideboard, Karn's playability would skyrocket.
Oh, for sure. This would be a 5.
Oh my God, if you could have a 10 card sideboard or 15 whatever and Karn could just get you any artifact out of your sideboard that would just be your Karn board, this card would be nuts. But
every single deck would play it because it would shut off every other deck at the table and let you win the game.
Yeah, every deck I think would structure around. It would be very good. But it's not. That's not the case for us.
Glad that we don't have
that. Glad that we don't. That being the case, not so good. It only sees play in some artifact decks, right?
Not even that, really. Like, I feel like it's like some Stax decks that are mono-colored and not Urza. It's just a bad spot to be in, I think.
I agree. 4 mana for this effect just feels a little late. It's a planeswalker, so it can be attacked. There are situations where you can protect it and you can set up a dominating board state, and this can be pretty good. You can even turn some of your bigger artifacts into creatures so you can attack your opponent and slowly get there and win the game.
I did like in Magda, turning your Portal to Phyrexia into a 9/9.
Magda plays it?
Yeah, Magda does play it, certainly something.
Yeah, that is something. It's not a go-to for me. I'm not looking at this card very frequently, but in the right deck, it can be powerful.
Yeah, is it better than Kaito? I'm excited for this corner that we're nailing ourselves into because we're going, the farther we get into this podcast, the more decimals are going to get placed into all of these numbers.
Is it better than Kaito? I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's a little bit better than Kaito because Kaito's only going in that one deck, but Silvala could also play Karn and not hate it.
Yeah, that's true. What's Kaito at right now?
Kaito's a 2.8.
Maybe Kaito should be a 2.5. Let's give ourselves some leeway between
but
Kaito
Amanatu's
and Grist.
But Amanatu's a 2.5. So
Kaito's a 2.6 maybe.
Kaito's a 2.6.
Let's give ourselves some leeway because I agree that Karn is a little... Why?
I was going to put Karn at a...
Better than Kaito, I think.
Probably a 2.95, because I think it might also be a little bit better than Grist, but worse than Diada.
Yeah. Okay, fine. 2.95.
Okay. We'll put Karn the Great Creator there. at 2.95.
I guess one-sided collector oof is stronger than destroy target creature planeswalker. Hero's Downfall.
I think so too. Not even destroy target, like sacrifice a creature to
destroy
target.
Yeah, what's that altar or something? There's a card that does that.
Bone.
Sacrifice a creature, destroy a target creature or planeswalker. That's that card.
Bone.
It's on screen right now. It's called Bone.
Splinters. That's what it is.
I'm gonna use my grist to bone your thing.
Your creature got boned.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Minx and Boo, Timeless Hero, is 2, a red and a green for a 3 loyalty planeswalker that when it enters or at the beginning of your upkeep, you can create Boo, a legendary 1-1 red hamster creature token with trample and haste. You can plus him up to put 3 +1/+1 counters on up to 1 target creature with trample or haste. And you can sacrifice a creature for -2. And when you do, Minx and Boo, Timeless Hero, deals X damage to any target where X is that creature's power. And if the sacrifice creature was a hamster, you draw X cards.
This is sometimes card advantage, right? Because you can sacrifice a hamster and draw like 4 cards normally.
Yeah, so it's card advantage and removal in the command zone.
And removal in the command zone, which is nice. It sacrifices a Protean Hulk, which is great.
Yeah.
I think the Gruul Protean Hulk piles are not great.
I think what you end up doing more in this deck is you pump up Minx with things like Become Immense other like Might of Old Carrosa type shit.
With this as the commander, yeah.
Yes, with this as the commander. And then you get in for combat at someone for like 16 damage. And then you sacrifice them for another 16 damage at someone, draw 16 cards. Then on your next turn, it's just like rinse and repeat.
That is a great use scenario for this card. It seems like that's a little bit easier said than done. People can respond to your pump spells. They can respond to the planeswalker activation, I think, too.
They can, yeah. So, like, you put the activation on the stack, they destroy Minx, and now you still have to sacrifice a creature, and when you do, Minx deals the damage, but, like, they won't draw the cards because there's no other hamster that they'll have.
As far as Gruul options, I think this is one of the top ones for me. The fact that it gives you card advantage, removal, and combo piece, it kind of feels similar to Jessica, to be honest. It just doesn't have partners, so there's less options.
I think there's a way, too, with infinite mana, you can, like, draw your deck with Minx and Boo.
Okay.
Because when it enters, it makes Boo, and then you can minus him to deal the damage to himself, and then you still draw the card.
Yeah.
That puts him back in the command zone.
Yep.
So if you have infinite mana, you can draw your entire deck with Minx and Boo, too.
That's pretty helpful. That's a big upgrade.
I should have said that first.
Oh, that's probably one of the more important things you can do. Like, it says any target the damage?
Any target. It can be himself.
How much loyalty is it coming with?
It comes up with 3.
And
so
it's
you
a
-2
two
him and then deal the 1 damage and you draw
the one card. Yeah, that sounds awesome. I know there's another like background deck. It's a Gruul deck that uses the background to do some sort of stuff. I think I like Minx and Boo better.
I think so, too. I liked Itali better, too.
Itali was the top dog. Now I think it's questionable. Now I'm not sure.
Now between the two, yeah. And this is a card that, like, you play in a lot of your red-green, like, mid-rangey decks. Like, I played this in Itali. It did not come up as much as I hoped that it would, but this wasn't my Itali deck. This is something that, like, I've seen in the rug decks that I've been putting together, too, since post-bans now.
I've seen it in Timnatana lists. I haven't elected there myself, but it does see play in a lot of Timnatana lists or any really creature-based decks that are playing red and green. I think it's up for one of your 4 drops that you can play. Not, you don't get many. You can play, like, maybe 3 or 4 drops, but it can be one of them.
It's, like, one of the best planeswalkers that they've ever printed.
I think just like across all formats, all of Magic, when you look at it like way back from just like as a Magic card, yes, it's like one of the best planeswalkers we've ever seen, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, we've come a long way from Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Yes, definitely. For CDH specifically, worse than Diada, right?
Man.
Is it or no?
Probably.
I think it's
I love Minchin Boo so much, but he's probably worse than Deanna.
Worse than Deanna, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but better than Grist.
Better than Grist, I agree. Similar to Grist, though.
What about versus Karn the Great Creator?
This is just gut reaction. I like what Minchin Boo does more.
Me too. So yeah. Let's give him a higher grade.
Drawing cards is better than shutting off my opponents.
That's true, yeah. So I think Minchin Boo then has to get something between 3 and 2.95.
Let's go with 2.99.
2.99.
Let's narrow the corner. Okay, we got even ourselves more. Into even more. And now when there's a card that's in between Minchin Boo and Deanna, it's going to be a 2.999.
Like, oh, no. All right. Narset Parter of Veils is 1 and 2 blue for a 5 loyalty planeswalker that says each opponent can't draw more than one card each turn, and you can -2 her to look at the top 4 cards of your library, reveal a non-creature, non-land from among them, put it into your hand, and put the rest on the bottom in a random order.
This is another... Did you finish saying what it does?
I did. I read the whole card.
This is another card that I view kind of like Garruk, where I want it to be good. On paper, it feels really good. In practice, it hasn't been as good as I want it to be. The potentials with Wheel of Fortune are pretty crazy, though. I'm kind of almost surprised it doesn't see more play.
In theory, this should be the best Planeswalker that we're talking about today, but I do think that, weirdly enough, the lack of a +1 ability is holding this card back, because once you get to the point where it is no longer threatening and like you can just get rid of it, then like there's nothing that you can do. Like at least like some of these other planeswalkers, like I guess maybe there's a lot of them that we are talking about now that don't have plus abilities that we're actually using, like Jessica Thrice Reborn and stuff.
I think this one's main issue is it just doesn't have a great home. Wheels isn't a strategy that's explored
good.
A lot right now in CDH.
Or good.
Yeah, I didn't want to say not good, but yeah, not good.
It's not good.
Not explored a lot right now, I'll go with. But yeah, not good.
And plus, we keep getting things that are just like better, that combo better with wheels. Like Sheoldred and Oakish Bowmaster.
And just like, you know what's the best thing that you can combo with the Wheel of Fortune? Fast mana that you'll draw after you cast the Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, and just like Underworld Breach.
Right. Yeah, Underworld Breach is like winning the game. There's just like things that are better. So like, yes, the potential of setting up a 6 mana sorcery speed, make your opponents all have 1 cards and you have a full grip. That is really good. I don't know that there's a commander that can really support that strategy right now.
Why set yourself up for future failure, right? You wheel then, and then your opponent tops deck Underworld Breach. Like they have outs. This is not a win the game card.
Right. It's a 2-card combo that doesn't actually win the game. Now, when you combine it with a bunch of other stuff, if you have Notion Thief, and if you have enough of those things, eventually it'll stack up. But the issue is you need enough powerful wheels. We only have 3 good wheels. Windfall, Wheel of Fortune, and Time Twister, in my opinion, are the only true playable wheels. All those other ones are a stretch, and you know it. They're not that good. They're close, but not great. But you need like 5 or 6 of those of that rate, 3 mana or less to drop.
The other problem, though, is that like even though you have the massive amount of other things you can do with the wheels, then when it is Narset that you have, you go, oh good, I have the bad one. And then there's like other stuff that can still go wrong for you when like that wouldn't happen with all of the creatures that go better with wheels instead.
And I think there was a moment in CDH where wheels were a lot better in the flash meta. I think when everyone was sandbagging for most of the game, where they were just setting up, they were having flash ready, but just not pulling the trigger because they knew everyone else had flash. When you're just like waiting, sculpting, planning for the late game, wheels are good then because they can disrupt you. And then you've been mystical tutoring and you have Flash Hulk in your hand and then you wheel it away and you can't do it. Wheels are good there, but that's not what it is in CDH. That's not what CDH looks like right now, I don't think.
No, the meta's changed the time.
Too many people can just like a fresh 7. Great. All my deck is mad consistent. So like if you give me a new 7, it's just going to like there's probably a good chance it's just as good if not better than what I already have in my hand. And then I get to untap after you. I guess that's just saying why wheels aren't good right now. Narset stops you from getting that fresh 7, but sorcery speed, double pips, doesn't actually win the game.
I didn't think this would happen, but I'm giving Narset a 1.
A 1?
A 1. What else are we going to give Narset?
That is pretty low, yeah.
No play in CEDH, might not even be qualified to be on the list.
What's the lowest one we have so far?
Jace, Wielder of Mysteries. That at least wins you the game with the 2-card combo that we talked about.
That's true. No decks play this card.
No decks are on this card. You could argue Jace, Wielder of Mysteries belongs in Talion.
Maybe. I think I'll give it around the same as Jace, 1 notch worse. That's hard, man, because I realistically, if I had to choose one of them, I would play Narset over Jace right now. I don't want to play Jace because I want to play Thassa's Oracle. Narset at least does something new and like does something different.
But you don't want to play Narset. You want to play Orcish Bowmaster. You want to play Shieldred. Yeah. You want to play Notion Thief. You want to play the cards that win you the game with it, not just like go.
Yeah, it's just not enough. Okay, I'll still give it a 1.4.
All right, that means it's going to average to a 1.2. Nicol Bolas Dragon God is a blue, 3 black, and a red for a 4 loyalty planeswalker that has all the loyalty abilities of all other planeswalkers on the battlefield. You can plus them to draw a card and have each opponent exile a card from their hand or a permanent they control. -3 to destroy a creature or planeswalker. And then -8 to have each opponent who doesn't control a legendary creature or planeswalker lose the game.
So this one is part of all the Sisse loops, all the stuff that you're doing with Aminatu, all those things that I already said about this combo. It applies here the same.
That's all that it's here for.
That's really all that it's here for. Nicol Bolas to me is worded in a way that will continue to get more and more broken as more and more planeswalkers get printed that are broken. Nicol Bolas can do the same thing. It works really well with things that can flicker stuff and untap stuff and do stuff like that. So I think Nicol Bolas has a ceiling to get stronger and stronger like Aminatu does. Aminatu can also be a commander, which Nicol Bolas can't. So I think Aminatu is a little bit better for that reason, that it exists in a home outside of just Sisse lines, which is kind of all Nicol Bolas is.
I think so too, but I think that we're going to end up moving them down like lower than Aminatu, lower than Garrick 2, and probably lower than Duretti, because at least like those are all seen play in like multiple other decks and other scenarios too.
I guess that's true. It's worse than Garrick because Garrick could see play in mono green. I think it's a fine slot for kind of a lot of mono green strategies, whereas this one it really only sees play in Sisse specifically. Yeah. Sisse is better than mono green. Does that make a difference?
I guess, yeah. But where's Sisse at in the meta right now, too?
It's too hard to say. I think this one is around a 2. I think this is better than Duretti, though.
All right, so then I'll go with that, too. All right, we'll say that Nicol Bolas Dragon God is a 2.05.
Sure.
Oko Thief of Crowns is one a green and a blue for a 4 loyalty planeswalker that +2s to make a food, +1s to have target artifact or creature lose all abilities and become a green elk with a base power and toughness of 3/3. And for -5, you can exchange control of target artifact or creature you control with target creature and opponent controls with power 3 or less.
This is another one that on paper seems like it should be so good. As far as like planeswalkers, from a zoomed out perspective of planeswalkers in Magic, I still believe Oko is top 5.
Yeah,
at least,
definitely
right?
top 3,
yeah.
I would say, even.
Realistically,
yeah.
It's one of the best planeswalkers that's ever been printed. For our format, 3 mana for interaction is a little bit much. That swap ability is cool. It just 3 mana for interaction is a lot. At 3 mana, you're looking to kill multiple stuff, and Oko is just not normally going to survive the untaps. You have 3 opponents, they can all attack it pretty easily.
And it leaves them with a thing still, yeah. Too. Like 4/3 mana, like there's so many better rates in CEDH that you could be going for.
And there are situations where, yes, you turn your opponent's commander into a 3/3, but they're able to politic with their other opponents to block the 3/3, and then now you can't turn 2 opponents' commanders into 3/3s because as soon as you do the second one, they'll attack each other, maybe, and then they'll get their commanders back, which is not something that you have to think about normally with Oko.
Or they just like play Diabolic Intent, right. And then it's like the perfect thing to sacrifice. Yeah.
I love Oko in Sisse as a legendary permanent that for only 3 mana gives +2, can help get rid of a stacks piece that'd be relevant, can do some relevant things inside of Sisse, but outside of Sisse, I don't really love it in other strategies. You could, if you wanted to be in like very slow Simic, but like Kinnan doesn't want this. Kinnan wants to be more lower to the ground with removal. It's just, yes, what the removal does is good. I would just rather Chain of Vapor. Or
are we just giving this card a really low grade then?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I think it probably goes similar to where Nicol Bolas goes. A little bit lower. Because Nicol Bolas is at least part of the combo. Oko is just an option.
Is Oko better than Duretti?
Duretti's another weird one where, like we said before, it only sees play because it's a commander. It wouldn't see play in the 99 normally. Oko at least can see play in the 99. Oko would see play as a commander probably, but it's not. We're not talking about a hypothetical.
I'm going to say that Oko's a 1.9.
I love it. All right, it's a little bit worse than Duretti.
Yeah,
so weird.
That's what I'm going to say. Yeah, because it's just a little bit weird. So we're going to move into Professor Onyx next. This is 4 and 2 black. For a 5-mana Liliana Planeswalker with Magecraft, whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. You can +1 to lose a life and look at the top 3 cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the rest into the graveyard. -3 to have each opponent sacrifice a creature with the greatest power among creatures that player controls, and -8 to have each opponent, they may discard a card, and if they don't, they lose 3 life and you repeat this process 6 more times. I should have stopped after the Magecraft ability because all this fucking thing does is just combo with Chain of Smog and mono black decks.
Yep, it is Tendrils of Agony on a stick. That's the main thing that this is for 6 mana. This, like you said, combos with Chain of Smog, target yourself over and over again. You're copying a spell over and over again, drain the whole table. That card advantage, I guess, is something. That removal, I guess, is something. You'll do it sometimes. You'll go, all right, whatever. This is there for the combo piece, though, specifically mono black.
But I think this is going to make this better than Garrick Primal Hunter and put her at least a 2.2.
I agree, yes, because this is like a vital part of a decent, not all mono black strategies. I don't know that, is Kirk on this, actually?
I would put Kirk on this list, I would say, because she only cost 4 mana then with Crick out, and that combo just gets so much easier to do, I think, in that deck.
I'm not positive if the Kirk decks are playing this one. I think they maybe should be. If there's any other mono black decks, I think they're looking to this combo. It's just a 2-card combo that, yes, you do have to discard your hand. No, you don't have silences, but if your thing is like storm stuff, you can just kind of use it as a Tendrils and try to storm. That's not really not good, right? That's probably not good. That's
no,
too hard.
But like it still does like draw you some cards in addition to being like that life gain to like help you get back into like your Crick scenario. I don't know. I guess it has life gain on it, so I feel like that would still be pretty good for Crick.
Can we look real quick to see if Kirk actually plays this one? Because if it does, I think this is better than Garrick. But if not, then not. Because Garrick only like sometimes sees play in those mono green decks. It doesn't always, and I don't always think it's right. I just think it's an option for those mono green decks.
Well, this Crick list with 1,439 likes is not on.
Not playing it.
Not on it, no.
That's kind of what I assumed.
But
think
mono black is also better than mono green, though, in my opinion.
Do you think?
I think, yeah.
Interesting. I think they're close. Kirk is the only mono black deck, right?
I guess for the most part, Kirk is really the only mono black deck.
You could play Yawgmoth.
But I do think that the level of difference between where Kirk is versus what Silvala and the other mono green decks are doing.
Crick
is
can
vastly
win on turn two. Crick can do Rock'sai stuff. It can be busted in the right hands.
And like Silvala can be too, but I do think that just like Crick has a little bit more consistency with it too.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Okay, so we give this a higher rating than Garrick?
I think I'm going to give it a higher rating than Garrick.
But not much.
Yeah.
Close. It's in the same ballpark.
Let's say 2.15 then.
I love it. I love that rating.
All right, that sounds good. Oh my god, the next card has so many fucking words. It's Rao Monsoon Mage because it's double sided.
Let's just skip this one. Does anyone play this? What, Rock'sai? Not Rock'sai. Karkasima. Do they play it?
Maybe. What if we just
look at
forgot
Ken's
it?
List? Can we look at Ken's
list
real quick?
Ken's
if Ken's list plays it, we'll talk about it. If not, too many words.
He's not on it.
All right. Yeah.
Okay.
Skip it.
That's
it's
why it was on
Ken.
Here.
It's not
was
good
like,
enough for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Look it up on your own. It's almost good enough for Kark and Sakajima.
All right. This next one has a lot of words on it.
Oh, is that what this too?
No, it's Tameo, the new Tameo, the flip Tameo.
Yeah, this one's wordy too.
All right. So our next one is Tameo, Inquisitive Student. This is a blue mana for a merfolk wizard that's a 0/3 flyer that when she attacks, lets you investigate. And when you draw your third card in a turn, you can exile. You flip her. And then when she comes into play as a planeswalker, she's got 2 loyalty. You plus 2 her so that until your next turn, whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, it gets -1/-0 until end of turn. Then for -3, you can return an instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. If it's green, you add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. And then you -7 to draw cards equal to half of your library rounded up. You have no maximum hand size for the rest of the game.
You know what's weird is like, I think the main thing holding this back is its green color identity, truly. Because I think if you could play this in Grixis, I think I would try it in Rock'sai.
Honestly, yeah, right?
Drawing 3 cards a turn is pretty easy to do. I'm already playing Brainstorm again.
Well, how do you get its loyalty to 7 after you flip it?
I guess
so
that's true. What does it come in with?
2.
2, and then you plus 2 it?
Yeah.
So you have to keep it around for a while. You have to plus it to 4, 5, 6, 7.
Do you want a Rad Storm? Rad Storm in the deck.
I guess it does take forever to ultimate, doesn't it?
That takes forever, yeah.
It comes up with only 2 loyalty, you sure?
I'm surprised this is a CEDH deck.
Is it? Yeah.
It seems
I mean,
so
as a
hard.
CDH deck, I like it a little bit more just because it's 1 mana. it turns on all of your stuff super quick. It's got
that
Rograckiness to it of like, it's one mana, it turns on Fierce, it turns on Mox Amber, it turns on all your commander shit right away. That's real good. And then the fact that sometimes it'll give you a clue that you can draw, or, you know, it'll buy back a removal spell from your graveyard or a tutor from your graveyard.
That's,
in my opinion, that's the main thing that this is doing. And then if the game gets super weird and you can threaten the ultimate, sure. But I think, in my opinion, the strengths of this card is that it's basically one mana Rograck. It's just a cheap commander.
Yeah, it's a Simic Rograck, basically.
Yeah.
I don't like the play pattern of player, next turn attack, next turn attack, crack two clues, flipper, and then she dies. Like, I don't like how that's going to end up going. Like, this is a way late game thing that you have to set up.
I think that the best thing that you can do with this is flip this on an opponent's turn by drawing three cards. I think that that's what this is going to be good at. You know what I mean?
That's the best thing you can do.
End step, brainstorm, flip Tamiyo. Kind of surprise. I think that's the kind of the best stuff that you can do. I don't think you should be trying to curve out with Tamiyo of like, player, get a clue, next turn, tap out to flipper. I don't think that's the route, because it's a blue deck. You're a Simic deck. You want to hold up interaction. I think you want to flipper at instant speed, and then on your turn, plus her to four right away. Is it a minus two? Can you regrowth right away?
It's a minus three. So you cannot regrowth right away. No, yeah, you can't like flipper and then regrowth and then like put her back in the command zone.
This is another card that I think just as a Magic card is extremely powerful. I don't love it in CDH yet.
Just for other formats. In general, it's very strong.
I think she's better than Duretti.
You know what? Then she's probably better than Nicol Bolas Dragon God.
I think simply being a blue-green deck with a one-mana commander is good. Truly. Like, I think that's just good. And I think the other stuff that she brings to the table, great. That's also fine.
I'm willing to give her anywhere from 2.2 and up.
I'm going to say 2.3.
2.3?
I'm going to start closing up that gap.
2.25 is what she'll get then. Cool. Let's talk about Teferi Temporal Archmage then. 4 and 2 blue for a 5 loyalty Teferi. You plus them up to look at the top two cards of your library. Put one of them into your hand and the other one on the bottom of your library. You minus 1 to untap 4 target permanents.
Ding, ding, ding.
And then you minus 10 to get an emblem with. You may activate loyalty abilities on planeswalkers you control on any player's turn at any time that you could cast an instant.
Huh. I haven't thought about this card a lot since the One Ring has been printed.
Neither have I, but that's kind of funny though,
right? This seems like a great One Ring deck.
This is...
better than Urza. Urza doesn't do anything with the ring. Urza does stuff with shitty stacks pieces. Who cares?
No.
This is stuff with the One Ring.
You play him and then you untap 4 lands and then you cast the One Ring too in the same turn,
sure.
Which is kind of cool.
You can do it that way, yeah.
Yeah.
You can do it that way. I like the play pattern of playing the One Ring first, tap, draw a card. Untap, make it to your turn, tap, draw 2 cards, play Teferi, untap, draw 3 cards, and then...
And 3 lands along with it.
And 3 lands along with it, so you can hold up stuff. Maybe we should give Teferi a second look. Teferi in the past has won with Veil of... Liliana's Veil, Mystic Veil. It's an artifact for 4 mana.
The Chain Veil.
Winds of the Chain Veil. Also really good with artifacts that want to tap. Stuff like Grim Monolith, Mana Vault, and the One Ring.
Plays a lot of really awkward cards, though.
Plays a couple, but it's been so many years. You could probably trim a lot of those awkward cards and just put like a bunch of blue counter spells, a bunch of ways to find artifacts, and that's it. What other cards were you playing before that were shitty? Do you remember them?
Thran Dynamo.
Get it out of here.
This deck has even won Black Lotuses.
Yeah, it has won some tournaments and stuff.
Yeah, so, but just like in the hands of one player in particular who knows the deck very well, and I've played that list.
Wasn't that when you played it didn't have Mox Diamond in it or something, too?
Yeah, right? Like, those are like just some weird cards.
Some players are just good. Sometimes just players are good and they win with bad decks.
Yeah.
Because of the One Ring, I think I'm looking at this card a lot more. I mean, if you go down that mental pathway, eventually you'll get to, why don't I just play fucking Derevi? Because then I can play 3 colors and it's also untapping the One Ring.
Oh, yeah. That's why this is bad.
If you want to do that, if you want to do Turbo One Ring, play Derevi because it has access to all the same shit and other ways to untap the ring multiple times.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's bad, actually. Never mind. I changed my whole opinion.
It's better than Duretti.
Because blue's better than Duretti. Blue's better than red. It's better than Duretti. 2.3. Yeah, what's that 2.3
that's
now?
That's high. Nice. It's better than Tamiyo Inquisitive Student.
Oh, wait a minute. What's Tamiyo at?
2.25.
Tamiyo doesn't have a great win condition.
Tamiyo sucks, yeah.
2.3 this is.
2.3 this is. All right, Teferi Time Raveler.
We're getting so close to the some of the best ones. We still haven't hit, in my opinion, our clear the top two picks. We still haven't hit them
yet. Yeah.
We're almost there. Sorry to interrupt. Teferi.
Yeah, I don't think we've hit them either. Yeah. The next one's Teferi Time Raveler. This is one, a blue and a white for a four loyalty that has a static ability that says each opponent can cast spells only at times that they can cast sorceries. You can plus them up so that until your next turn, you can cast sorcery spells as though they had flash. And for minus three, you can return up to one target artifact, creature, or enchantment to its owner's hand and draw a card.
Teferi, plus Displacer Kitten, plus a rock that produces more mana than it costs to cast and doesn't have a downside to cast it. So that's a long way to say Sol Ring or Mana Vault. Or Grim Monolith?
Or Mox Opal if you already have.
Mox Opal or Mox Amber.
If you already have the condition.
With Teferi, you bounce the rock to draw a card. You recast the rock to trigger the Displacer Kitten, and the Displacer Kitten flickers a Planeswalker, so it's fresh again, the Teferi, so then you can bounce the rock again.
Yeah, because you're also tapping the rock
in between
before it goes back to your hand, so you're drawing through your deck, making a bunch of mana.
With a Mox Amber, you're netting mana of any color. With Sol Ring, you're netting colorless mana.
Because Mox Amber, it counts creatures and planeswalkers or just creatures?
No, it is just creatures. I guess it makes mana of any color that your commander is if you have Mox Amber.
Yeah. And planeswalkers you control.
That's really cool. So blue and white with Mox Amber. I think this combo is a touch underrated, which is kind of weird to say because I think it's probably one of the more popular combos right now, and underrated, that doesn't make sense.
If you're in blue white, I think you should probably be
doing this. Because like the Sol Ring slot, that's already in your deck. That's not an include. The Displacer Kitten, it's kind of only got to go in if your commander's got a good ETB, something like Tivit or something like that. This combo is a great combo in Tivit. It's great in Atraxa's hard to play right now, but anything like that where like flickering your commander with the kitten when you're doing other stuff would also be good. The trap is you can't play Teferi and pass. You only play Teferi when you're winning with this combo. And when you are, it's great because it helps with protection for this combo. But playing Teferi and pass is the same thing as playing a defense grid and pass. You give your other opponents protection. So that's not good. That's the trap part about this combo.
Unless you have silence and a way to get back silence on every one of your opponent's turns somehow. Sure.
Unless you are prepared to stop your opponents from winning
the game. That's the only difference. Right? Is that it at least gives you that window?
I think this one is great. I think this is probably a go-to, especially now with Dockside gone. I think this is going to pick up a lot more popularity. That's kind of the thing I think about when I think about like underrated. Is like I haven't seen this particular combo being chatted about since the Dockside bans, and I think that this is the one that benefits the most. Although weirdly, Displacer Kitten was really good with Dockside, so maybe Kitten gets a little bit worse now.
I guess
I'm not
that's
sure.
True. Yeah, Kitten I feel like might get a little bit worse, but Kitten's also really good with like Eternal Witness and just like a lot of these other like loops that you can get into. So
and then anytime we get a new commander that has a great ETB. Kitten's gonna be like, hi, remember me? I'm really broken. You forget, and then we'll remember again. I think Teferi is one of the best cards we talked about.
I think Teferi gets a 4.5 because it is so powerful.
It's
you can use
blue
him
form a lot of the time,
right? Like even if you don't have the Displacer Kitten thing going on, it's still a silence.
If you're winning with Breach or with Thassa's Oracle another way, it is still a silence.
It's still a silence to have. Sometimes the decks that play this also get to play cards like Dam, and when you can like Wrath at instant speed too, like there's a lot of really cool things that I think Teferi lets you do.
Yeah, I agree. I think, 4.5 sounds real. I think Teferi is a real CEDH card that sees play in top tier decks. It's part of a combo that draws you cards, that gets rid of stuff. It's like, it is everything that we want a Planeswalker to be. I think it got a lot of like hate in the beginning because you were giving the game to other players. As long as you don't do that and use it the way it's supposed to be used, it's very powerful.
Exactly, yeah. So let's talk about Tevish Zot, Doom of Fools. Yeah. This is 4 and a black for a 4 loyalty guy that can be your commander. You plus 2 to get 2/0/1 black thrall creature tokens. You plus 1 to sacrifice another creature or planeswalker, and if you do draw 2 cards, then draw another card if you sacrificed your commander this way. Then to minus 10, you can gain control of all commanders. You can put them into play from the command zone onto the battlefield under your control, and it has partner.
Yeah, this one is somewhere around the strength of Jeska, a little bit worse, I think.
It used to be arguable between the two, which one was better.
Yeah.
Because like you could pair this up with Rograk and like have a really cool way to make sure you're drawing 3 cards in your command zone with this. You could pair him up with Thrasios and have like these grindy bug Sultai decks, or even better, you pair them up with Crown and have like an actual CEDH competitive Grixis deck that can play a more long game too.
Without Mana Crypt and Dockside and Jewel Lotus, that strategy gets a little bit trickier with these specifically. The five mana commanders, they lose a little bit.
But he's still good.
With specifically the Grixis version, it's hard to say that you want to play that over Rog'Sai or Timna Krom.
Now.
Right. Especially right now. It's really hard to say, like, yeah, there's a good reason for me to be playing this over those, because I think the best reason that that had is this was an outlet for Dockside and Baron Master Wizard. You could cast Tevershot over and over again and draw your whole deck by sacrificing the Tevershot with the Baron Master Wizard and going through with Dockside. I like that it works really great with Skullclamp, because you can sacrifice the token Skullclamp, draw two for each thing. That's really nutty. I like that it's a thing that black-based decks can do in the command zone that can get them card advantage. So, like, your Dark Rituals can go somewhere that may not be an ad nauseum, but they at least can go into this thing that will gain you cards. So that's good. But the things that I said, the Rog'Sai and Timna Krom, I think it, like, it loses points for that. So somewhere in the twos. The
I think so,
twos.
Too. I think really the only thing that's really going for it is that it's like the hardest Planeswalker in Commander to get rid of, because it does such a good job of playing out bodies to protect itself, and its loyalty number is so high.
So high.
Thralls is a plus two ability. Even the sacrifice thing is a plus ability. Yeah, so it's always plussing.
Yeah, the fact that it's always plussing, and if you get this down on turn one, there's a reasonable chance that you could ultimate this Tevershot. Like, if there's no creatures in play already and you just get this out of the command zone off of a Dark Ritual and some other fast mana, there's a reasonable chance that you ultimate it, and that will help you win the game for sure.
It's just really hard to do that now.
What do we have in the early twos right now?
We have stuff like Teferi Temporal Archmage at like 2.3. I think this is better than that. I think it's better than Amanatu still, which is a 2.5. Is it better than Kaido, Bane of Nightmares?
I think it's better than Kaido.
The partner ability just gives Tevish a lot of flexibility.
I think it's better than Bane. It's just only because mainly it's been around more and it's more flexible. Bane only goes in Yuriko.
Then we'll give Tevish a 2.85. We have three more Planeswalkers to talk about.
Two of them are the best ones, I think.
I guess we'll find out. Jeez, I hope so.
I might have a special include at the end if we don't.
Okay, I guess we'll find out. Tezzeret the Seeker?
That's one of them.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think this one's so phenomenal. Yeah. Three and two blue for a four loyalty Tezzeret. You plus him to untap two target artifacts. Minus X lets you search your library for an artifact with CMC X or less.
That's the one.
And put it into play. Yeah, that just finds the One Ring, finds Basalt Monolith. For minus five, artifacts you control become artifact creatures with base power and toughness 5/5 until end of turn.
It's a tutor. This is a tutor for Kinnan to use to find Basalt Monolith or find the One Ring. You won't get the cast, but, or like, that's what this is. It's just like a five mana tutor in the right big mana deck is good enough.
And honestly, there's a lot of decks using it to try to find the One Ring. And honestly, as I'm saying this, I should be playing this in Thrasios Rograk.
Ooh.
Because not only will it get me the One Ring, I'm playing the Basalt Monolith Kinnan combo.
Oh, yeah.
And we've started thinking that maybe some of the Gaia's Cradle combos aren't what the deck should be doing. And maybe it's time for Dramatic Scepter to come back, right? And like, Tezzeret helps you get Isorev together too.
Tutors that put stuff right into play, I think, are really good because they give you that hidden information, especially if you can bluff. Your opponents don't always know what's going in. You are allowed to. It's X or less, right?
X or less,
so if
yeah.
you wanted to, you could minus three. They think, what could that be? I don't know. I can't think of any three drops. And you go get a two drop and it's Isochron Scepter. That stuff's not going to always come up, but the fact that it gives you that option to hide some information, I think makes it a lot better, right? Because if it was just a five mana tutor to put in your hand, that's not as good, but you can get this one right into play. I like this card a lot. Everything you really only sees play in Kinnan right now when it comes to like top tier decks, but if you're in a blue based artifact deck, which there are a ton of tier two and tier three decks that are like bluish with artifacts, I think Tezzeret is an awesome include into most of those decks.
So I think Tezzeret's gonna get a four because there's just so much good stuff you can get.
It's a real card.
Tezzeret's only gonna get better as we get more artifacts that we want to see in every deck too. So
and the untaps what now?
The One Ring.
The One Ring.
Like two artifacts, actually.
Yeah. The same thing that the reason we were talking about why Teferi is good, Tezzeret's way
better at that. Yeah. So love Tezzeret the Seeker. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Four sounds great.
All right. Our next one is Tyvar Jubilant Brawler. Yep. So this is one, a black and a green for a three loyalty Tyvar that lets you activate abilities of creatures as though they had haste. And then for plus one, you can untap up to one target creature. And then for minus two, mill three cards. Then you can return a creature card with mana value two or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Yeah, this one, I mean, if Sissei does still exist, it's on the back of Tyvar for sure. Tyvar giving your creatures pseudo haste so that your Bloom Tender can tap right away. Tyvar being able to reanimate your Bloom Tender, which can now tap right away because of the Tyvar. Tyvar being able to untap your Bloom Tender so you can make more mana. Like, in my opinion, if Sissei exists, it's on the back of Tyvar, and things that can do things that are similar to what Tyvar does. That ability, we don't have that on this low of a mana rate so far, of like that pseudo haste that also untaps, that also reanimates. Like, those are three crucial things for three mana.
The 1,000-year elixir, I think, would be the thing that's probably the closest to it, where...
And that's three mana and then another to tap and activate, right? You have
to pay
mana,
right?
Yeah,
so it is still a little bit cheaper, but like at the same, or a little bit more expensive, but at the same mana cost. But so I think Tyvar is just like, it's just so much more.
So many of the lines that I was playing with Sissei were facilitated through Tyvar. Oh, Tyvar lets me untap it. Like, getting to untap the thing changes everything. That's two activations rather than one. Like, it really makes a huge difference.
So what do we want to rate Tyvar then? Because again, like, we're not sure where Sissei's at. And surprisingly enough, there hasn't been like Hermit Druid decks that have popped up because of this card either.
Yeah, this one cannot be played as a commander.
No, this one cannot be.
Kind of a bummer, because if it could, it would be pretty good, I think.
I think so too.
I think it would be. I don't know. I rate it similarly to Aminatu, and the only reason that I'll unfortunately probably give it a little bit weaker of a rating is because it can't be a commander. It only really sees play in the one deck. In my opinion, from what I've seen, it only sees play in Sissei. Could it see play in some other untappy decks? Yes, in the future, if something untappy gets printed that's broken, Tyvar will be able to use the hell out of it. But right now, it only really sees play in one deck that we're not sure is good. We've said that before about Nicol Bolas and the other ones.
Then we're going to give him a 2.4 so that he's a little worse than Aminatu, but better than Temporal Archmage Teferi, which I think makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah. High ceiling, though. High ceiling for the future, one that I'm looking out for in the future.
Cool, and then the last one that I have on the list then is... Oh, man, I guess I have two more, because I just realized...
Did you realize the one that I'm thinking of?
I don't know, maybe. We'll find out. So there's Vivian Monsters Advocate.
That's the one that I'm thinking of.
Really?
It was Tezzeret and Vivian for me, the I think are some of the best ones.
Oh, I wouldn't say this is like one of the best planeswalkers ever, but maybe that's because you're a little bit...
I'm jaded.
You're jaded right now on this mono green pill.
This one does something that... Wait. I'm sorry, which Vivian are you talking about?
Monsters Advocate is 3 and 2 green.
This is not
three
loyalty. This is not the one
ones.
I was thinking about. Yeah. No, this one's not very good.
You may look at the top card of your library at any time and cast creature spells from the top of your library. You can plus her to make a 3/3 beast and put either a Vigilance Reach or Trample counter on it. And to minus two, whenever you cast a creature spell this turn, you search your library for a creature card with lesser mana value and put it onto the battlefield.
Okay, so yes, this one is not the Vivian that I was thinking about. I was thinking about the other Vivian. So
the other Vivian is the one that I forgot that is going on the list after this.
Yeah, this Vivian is really, I think, good for that tutor ability, and it's unfortunately only good in certain strategies, probably closer to mono green.
Yeah, so I think it's going to end up being somewhere around where, like, Garruk Primal Hunter is.
The big issue is that you have to spend 5 mana for this, and then you have to spend mana on another creature afterwards only to get something smaller than it. So if you have 6 or 7 mana and you cast a 2-drop and you find a 1-drop, nah, that's not that good. If you have this and you are able to cast a Shaya and you go get Quirion Ranger, that's pretty good.
But it's not good if you have Quirion Ranger and don't have a way to find a Shaya.
Right. In mono green in Kona, I thought this card was awesome. It was able to get me some card advantage. It was able to put some bodies on the board. I wonder, and I'm not sure if decks like the Abzan one that loves counters that I can't remember right now, what the fuck?
Oh, I don't think that Tyam plays
Tyam.
It.
I don't think that Tyam plays it either. You're probably right. But to me, it looks like a Tyam card. It puts counters on stuff. It's creatures. It lets you go find stuff. The fact that it's a tutor is another one of these things that, like, I have high potential for it. It's just not seen a ton of play right now. And it only sees play in some green decks. I've seen it play in the Naya Minx and Boo list sometimes.
Really?
Some of the Nihilists kind of like it. Maybe Rocko, because you really want to find Quirion Ranger to bounce your Rocko to recast.
I've never seen this card in a deck that's more
never
than mono green.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not very good. What do you want to rate it?
Probably lower than Garruk Primal Hunter. Maybe it's better than Garruk Primal
Hunter. It's around Garruk Primal. What's Garruk at?
Oh, 2.1. Professor Onyx is 2.15.
This is between those two. Although I love Garruk more, I think the fact that this can offer some type of card advantage, but can also help you tutor up a creature, I think that's really good.
So then Vivian Monsters Advocate gets a 2.105.
Sure.
And then our last Planeswalker is Vivian on the Hunt.
Yes, this is the one that I was thinking of.
4 and 2 green, 4 loyalty, +2 to sacrifice a creature. And if you do, you search your library for a creature card with mana value equal to 1 plus the sacrifice creature's mana value. +1 to mill 5 cards and then put any number of creature cards milled this way into your hand. And then -1 to create a 4-4 Rhino Warrior.
The Birthing Pod ability. Basically, this acts as a second Birthing Pod in Naya-based decks. If you can find Felidar Guardian to flicker the Vivian, you can find Kikijiki to make a copy of the Felidar Guardian, or I missed a spot in the line, you find Karma Guide. You can basically flicker over and over again to end up on Felidar Guardian and Kikijiki with Vivian.
The same way that you do with Birthing Pod, but it would still allow you to like have a Collector Oof in play,
right,
and
yes,
go through this line.
Yeah, and the fact that this is like Birthing Pod only really goes for that line, I guess it can also be tutor for other stuff, but the fact that this can also like draw you some cards, put a 4-4 into play, it does some other things.
It does some stuff. I think it's just a bit of a shame that like this whole Birthing Pod thing didn't end up catching on as much as maybe I thought that this Vivian would. Like, I think we see it a lot because you play Tim Natana a lot. But outside of that, like, I don't see Tim Natana a ton outside of our play group. And I used to play it in Rocco, but not a lot of other Rocco lists ended up being on it. So I don't know. What do you want to rate it? That's what I'm trying to ask.
The one other thing that I wanted to mention is that with Delighted Halfling, this is a legendary permanent that can be made uncounterable.
That's
with Delighted
pretty
Halfling,
wild, actually.
Whereas
yeah.
Birthing Pod can't. And I've liked that a lot because there are a lot of situations where you can get Delighted Halfling into play early and people are like, why are you getting Delighted Halfling into play? And you do this, whatever. So I think this is good. Maybe my gut reaction is wrong. And maybe this isn't one of the best Planeswalkers. To me, there's not that many options. I think this is probably like the third or fourth best Planeswalker on CDH. It's the only one that is actually a win condition. With just this and any 3-mana creature in play, if you're in Naya colors, at least you win the game. The other Planeswalkers don't offer that.
Jessica is a win condition.
Jessica requires 2 other pieces. This requires 1 other piece. Jessica's 3 mana,
this
is 6 mana.
Well,
1 other piece versus 2. Or, but it's 3 mana versus 6. I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
that's what I'm
so
saying.
Like, there's a lot of other trade-offs that go with that, too.
Yeah, Jessica can also be a commander and is a partner and has and those things Vivian doesn't have. So Vivian is a lot more narrow. So maybe it's not one of the best. I would want to rate this like a 3.5. That's where my gut would
you
say this
is. You
want
to put this at a I think that Jessica, Thrice Reborn, and maybe even Dayada are a little bit better. Because, like, there are cards that were seen, especially Dayada,
and like
actually.
Three.
Yeah, like, they were seen really consistent CEDH, like, tournament play. Whereas, like, this Vivian did not really get there in terms of like its tournament pedigree. So I don't know that like, is it even better than like Tevish and Grist and stuff like that too? Like it does give you that Birthing Pod line, but like Birthing Pod itself has fallen out of favor a ton too.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be my jaded opinion. I have won a lot of games with this card, so it's hard for me to give it a low rating. If I get to choose, I'm going to give it a 3.5, but you can give it the lower rating that would balance it out. I think this one is one of the better ones. It doesn't see a ton of play, but I still think it's good.
Okay, I think I'll give you something where I can still put it in the top 5.
We have Diada at 3, Jessica at like 3.2 or something. What's after that?
Tezzeret the Seeker at 4.
I like this card better than Jessica, so maybe 3.5 is a little high. I'm going to give it a 3.3 confidently, though.
You're
going to
give
it
a 3.3 confidently? I still think that it's worse than Jessica.
Fine. What is your rating for it?
My honest opinion is that I also think that it's worse than Tevish, so I would have to give it like lower than a 2.85, but I think it's better than Kaito, so I think 2.805 would be my rating for Vivian.
Great. What's an average between 2.805 and 3.3?
Let's find out. Okay.
Somewhere around a 3-ish, 3.1 or something.
3.0525.
That's the rating it gets, I think. Because I will admit that I'm giving it a higher rating because I am jaded and I have won games with the card. And I think in that strategy, I think it's really good. But I understand that a lot of other people don't.
That still puts Vivian in the top 10. Five, actually, even.
Should we talk about our top 10 Planeswalkers in CDH? Is there a cutoff?
There is, yeah.
I feel like we should go from 10 up, right?
Yeah, we got it. So our number 10 best Planeswalker in CEDH, surprisingly, is Kaito, Bane of Nightmares.
Weird. We never talked about it on the thing. We've never seen it in play once. But
no,
great.
But okay. That gets us over 10. Tevish Zot came in at number 9 with 2.85. Our number 8 Planeswalker is Grist, the Hunger Tide, at a 2.9. Karn is our number 8, the Great Creator, our number 8 Planeswalker at 2.95.
Wait, you just said 8 for Grist, I thought.
Then Karn came in at number 7 because then Minx and Boo, Timeless Hero, came in at number 6 at a 2.99. And then Vivian on the Hunt came in at number 5 with a 3.0525.
You fucked it up again.
Yeah,
just write
I did.
The numbers next to it.
I did, and the number's right next to it, because actually, Dayada's number 5 out of 3.
So then Bane isn't in the top 10. Bane's in 11?
No, they're just switched around. Dayada came in at number 5 with a 3, but Vivian's actually at number 4 with a 3.0525.
Okay.
And then Jessica Thrice Reborn came in at a 3.1. And that's our number 3 Planeswalker, Jessica, our bronze medalist, Jessica Thrice Reborn.
It's such a big distinct 3.15, and to the next one is Tezzeret?
And then Tezzeret, yeah, our silver medalist is Tezzeret out of 4.
Yeah.
And then our gold medalist is Teferi Time Raveler that came in at 4.5.
Honestly, I don't know that I would have said that at the beginning of the podcast, that Teferi is the best Planeswalker in CDH, but it does make sense. It sees play in a lot of other lists like Tivit and other weird things. Yeah, it makes sense. It's part of a win condition. Yeah. It's protection.
I think the only reason why it was on my brain as the best one is because like that's a combo. It's combo line, something that like I've actively been like looking to try to put into more decks. Like it was something I was doing in Kenrith towards the end there too. So
I just think, yeah, for some reason, I haven't played it a ton since Atraxa. I haven't played any decks, I don't think, that were playing it. So I haven't just seen it personally in my hands recently. But I stand by it now. Teferi's the best. Tezzeret's second. Jessica's third. I think that fits. That sounds right.
I think so, too.
What are yours? Tell us your favorite Planeswalkers in CDH, or what you think the best ones are, or where we messed up on this list. Thanks so much for watching. If you like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Your boy Blue, Funko K, Sparky B, Insomnia, SD Phillip, Olden Groupie, Gecko 21, Caleb Pritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Shaun of the Ice, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrease, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Go to 9, Quajay Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Huge shout out to Dragon Shield for supporting the show. Use our link playtowin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
See you next time.
Connor Williams, Roy Turner, Mystic Muffin Man, Jacob Bauer, Tyler Watson, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H., Mallcraft, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Justin Mansolo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Poino, and David Nelson.
I'm going to real quick just pause so that I can do this. The sun is like bouncing off of this.
Oh, yeah.
It might just look kind of weird that I put a sweatshirt there, but
no one will know. Our number 5 Planeswalker. No, I messed up again. I missed a number.
You started over? It's okay. Jill's been licking her ass this whole time in the back.
Oh, God. Nice. All right.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.